We come here tonight to sacrifice the body of...
What is your name again, Tiffany?
My name is Jennifer.
Super. We come here tonight to sacrifice the body of Jennifer from Devil's Kettle.
Please, please.
With the deepest malice, we deliver this virgin unto thee.
And the sky was made of amethyst.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's bonus review of Jennifer's Body.
Jennifer's evil. She's actually evil, not high school evil.
A patron-exclusive review chosen by John O'Connor.
You give me such a wedding.
Hosted by Jacob.
Jennifer says he's extra salty, so.
Salty.
Arnie.
I wasn't always this cracked. I used to be normal.
And Stuart.
We have stuff in common. That's why we're Biffs.
This podcast is spoiler-filled and contains harsh language.
I have never heard you drop the F-bomb.
Listener discretion is advised.
Supposedly it helps us vent our aggressions.
We hope you enjoy the show.
All right, here we go. It's going to be gnarly.
Today we're discussing Jennifer's Body, but not in like a toxic male gazy kind of way. No, we're discussing a movie called Jennifer's Body, not a woman named Jennifer's Body. Starring Megan Fox, Amanda Seyfried, Johnny Simmons, J.K. Simmons, Amy Sedaris, Adam Brody, directed by Karin Kasama. This is the Now Playing co-host, who's a cool dude and a hoe, Arnie.
You sure are. This is Stuart.
And this is your extra salty morsel, Jacob. Guys, I could do like 15, 16 different intros, like so many quotable lines in this film.
There are.
Don't be jello that I got the best opening lines.
Hey, Vagisil, I have a wealth of opening lines for our show. I'll tell you that much. An abundance for the credits.
Hello, September patrons. We have covered all kinds of movies for you guys, and this is, a real left turn from the conversation and some of the things we've been covering this summer. Picked by one of you, John O'Connor. Found the money and the interest in a 2009, how else would you describe this other than a Megan Fox flop? Like, this was an underrated horror film?
Yes, underrated or cult classic now. What John said is, yeah, this was maligned upon its initial release, but he says critics now claim the movie as a forgotten cult classic. And I do know there have been a lot of defenders and a lot of people should be thanking John, because I've seen many times on Twitter and on our Facebook page and group people saying they wanted us to review Jennifer's Body. And I've run away from that like my hair was set on fire, because I've seen Jennifer's Body before. And I honestly, I can't say I was anxious to go back, but John thought, you know, he knows how much we love Megan Fox, so...
Is he saying that ironically?
I mean, that's a joke,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's a joke.
Yes, yeah.
And he finds this movie to be silly camp fun that works as an entertaining popcorn movie and happens to feature vampirism, ancient curses, and supernatural horror comedy.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard about this reputation building up for this film, like that it is now considered like this underrated gem. I've never seen it before. I remember seeing the trailer and going, oh, Megan Fox running around with her tits hanging out. I don't know. Maybe that should appeal to me, but I'm like, I don't need to see that. Just another bad Megan Fox film. But yeah, I keep hearing, and I looked at a bunch of just random people's reviews of this after I watched the film. It seems like a younger crowd is really into this. I don't know if it's Gen X, but it seems very feminist, very gay friendly, and much younger than us.
I think not Gen X. Yeah, I think this is maybe the millennials film. The way I feel about Dream a Little Dream and Pump Up the Volume, maybe they feel about Jennifer's Body, like it speaks to their high school experience.
Totally what I'm getting here. I want to just put that out there right now. In 2009, I was working at Fox, who put out this film.
What is Fox Atomic? Is this their like young hip distribution arm?
No, this is where they put their genre stuff. I've seen a lot of Fox Atomic.
Yeah, it had a meltdown. It didn't last very long. They were all pretty bad. But yes, this was basically, just want to point it out there, many people would call this a Megan Fox movie.
It is not. That's a shock to me.
And that was certainly how it was billed. But for me, it was definitely the follow-up of the Oscar-winning Juno for the writer Diablo Cody. This is coming from someone that had been anointed voice of her generation. And so it was quite a come down, a real stumble, I would say, on the level of Mallrats or Southland Tales, that you had someone that was plucked and put up on a pedestal, and all of a sudden this is their next film, and you go, oh shit.
Hold on. You say voice of her generation. She's only 3 years younger than me. So is she the voice of my generation?
None of these words have come out of my mouth, especially in high school.
Yes. It's certainly the thing that gets mentioned a lot about Diablo Cody's screenplays, Juno, and anything else she's written.
Oscar-winning screenplays, yes.
Yes. Oscar winner is that she has her own distinct language and that her characters have a slang that, again, I think of Kevin Smith, or, you know, it just taps into a vulgar yet hip kind of lingo. Quentin Tarantino, you know, that's the aspiration here. And she got to wear that crown for a little bit and be called the golden child of Hollywood until this film came out. And then that reputation kind of evaporated. And so, not unlike Kevin Smith, who now people say Mallrats is good, I can see how this might be suddenly developing that cult reputation.
Maybe so. Now, I did see Juno back in the day, honest to blog, and it had won its Oscar by that point, and I gave it a shot. I mean, I like several of the actors in it, Rainn Wilson and Michael Cera and Elliot Page, but I didn't love that movie. I'd probably, if memory serves, give it a weak recommend, but I felt it was way overhyped at the time, as I often feel about Oscar-winning teen dramas. Lady Bird! But then this movie came out, and it's horror, it's Megan Fox, it's called Jennifer's Body, and listen, Megan Fox's body was probably the best special effect in those first two Transformers films. So I'm not going to lie. I watched it to look at Megan Fox. I bought some, her photos, scantily clad, were on the front of magazines to sell magazines. I bought some of those magazines, Maxim and what have you.
Yeah, I figured that was the point of this movie. That's what all the marketing at the time was telling me. Hey, you want to stare at Megan Fox for 90 minutes? Here you go.
That is my other memory of this movie, is that I shared a cubicle with a guy that was completely obsessed with her and actually got fired because he snuck away from his job to go see this movie premiere, like it was on the lot, and she was going to be there talking with Diablo Cody, and he just had to get near her, which meant he wasn't doing his work, and goodbye, but maybe he felt it was worthwhile.
Yeah, I thought you said he was going to sneak away just to go see like a matinee viewing in theater. Like, that's not worth it, but I don't know. You get to see someone you're really into. Maybe it was worth it.
Yeah, well, he came back and said the one thing that like she kind of fucked up, that like that it was Megan Fox trying to promote the movie, and she said something to the effect of, you know, guys, it's like actually good and stuff. Like she she was trying to, like, almost like she was shocked herself.
Was she in character?
No, I think that what is problematic about this movie, now that I've seen it, and I did see it when it hit video, was that they are trying to say that there is more to Megan Fox than her body. That we have, as a society, you know, salivated over her, and we've objectified her and put her in a box, when in fact there's so much more dimension to her personality. No, I think it was even clear to Diablo Cody, who was, again, angry watching this girl torpedo their press conference, that she just didn't seem to get it. And this was a strange match of Michael Bay Babe with voice of her generation, Diablo Cody.
Again, our generation, she's Gen X firmly.
Well, she got to claim the title no matter how old she is. But
so the voice of the millennial generation.
Or Gen Z, who knows? Someone's voice.
I mean, this is coming out in 2009, and I do feel like it's a lot about specifically the music, the fashions, the movies, the pop culture of 2009. So that would be Gen Z to me.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But Diablo Cody is not Gen Z. She is not of this generation. And she's not even the John Hughes of Gen Z, because I think she's moved on to television. I should come out with a bias right away. I hate Diablo Cody with a burning passion. And it's not just her movies. She was a writer for Entertainment Weekly. I was reading her columns before Juno and hating her. And I continued reading her columns after Jennifer's Body. And I just stopped reading it. I used to read every issue of Entertainment Weekly cover to cover. And her columns all spoke like her characters do, with made up slang terms and holier than thou. And it felt like a lot of name dropping after Juno began. It was like, well, I was talking to, I can't remember a specific instance, but I'll be like, well, I was talking to Quentin and you know what he said.
Yes. I have listened to her commentary track for this movie. In fact, I have watched this movie four times because it has a rated cut, an unrated cut, and a different commentary for each. And I agree. The Diablo Cody name dropping is its own game. She is very proud to be like, oh, I was just talking to Courtney Love about this. And she's so happy that she hadn't seen the movie, but she was so glad she was going to get a residual check.
Yeah, I was going to say she's happy she's getting a paycheck because they used the whole song. I'd be happy too.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of strange that you didn't take offense to the fact that Courtney Love couldn't be bothered to actually watch Jennifer's Body, but, you know, whatever.
Or give the song Jennifer's Body to Jennifer's Body. That's the thing, is this movie is named after a whole song. There is a whole song in the movie.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, it's from Live Through This. It's from the same album where you think of, I mean, Courtney Love only has three albums, but yeah, it's the one she worked with Kurt Cobain on that people like Hole for.
Yeah, the one people listen to.
Yeah.
Before she killed him for his music.
Or whatever, yes.
So I watched this movie with a couple of biases. Megan Fox, if we were still doing platinum headphones, she would have double platinum headphones from us. She was in the Transformers series. She was in the Mutant Ninja Turtle series, and perhaps her best performance was in Jonah Hex.
Oh, forgot yeah. about that.
Totally wiped that from my mind.
But the moment I read it, I remembered it.
Yeah, no, it's all coming back now that you say it.
Yeah. She was a flavor of the month in 2009.
Yeah, this was the same year as Transformers 2, and the year before she called Steven Spielberg a Nazi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would all go away very, very quickly. And so it's interesting to come back to this movie for no other reason, maybe, than to think about how different things are in 2009 than they are in 2021. Time has passed, even though to me it feels like, oh, that wasn't that long ago.
2009 was not long ago, Stuart.
I watched this movie and it feels like forever ago when any of this would have been relevant or popular.
Well, yeah, any of these songs, any of this, would this dialogue ever be relevant? Like, it feels so foreign.
I'll give it this. I mean, while we're talking about the dialogue, the fact that it's not real slang gives this a timeless quality. You know, it's not like if you go back to some of those 80 films where they're talking about Grody and totally awesome to the max, dude. You know, so because it's not real slang.
No, here's the thing. If I played this for my girls, and I'm not going to, but if they discover it someday, they would ask me, oh, is this how people talk then? Because they, our oldest was 3 years old in 2009. So like they have no memory of this. They would think this is real.
But the music does not feel that old to me, as I'm still listening to Panic at the Disco and Cobra Starship. And ironically, these are the exact same bands that were on the Snakes on a Plane soundtrack.
I can't believe they got Screeching Weasel on the soundtrack. I guess that there's another band that was happy to get a payday, like Courtney Love.
Well, you bring up something interesting here. Snakes on a Plane is a movie that failed largely because I feel like there ended up being no real built-in audience for it. It was an internet meme that somehow became a movie and then failed. I think that is a similar story here. No one could explain whether this was a softcore lesbian high school thing, or was it a teen comedy like Mean Girls, or, you know, Clueless, or was it an actual slasher movie? Like, it didn't seem to have a shape or a form to it. No one could describe it. How can you market this? They put it out in September.
What does Jennifer's Body look like? Yeah.
Right, yeah. It's hard to tell what her body type is, and thus it's hard to know who she would be appealing to. I think they called this a horror movie. I think most of the marketing at Fox, most of the push was to put it out in September, October, to try and get some Halloween vibe out of this. But I don't know. Watching it, It feels much more close to like a Mean Girls movie.
Well, the movie that came to mind was The Craft. Like, I really got a Craft vibe out of this one.
Oh, yeah, definitely The Craft. And I remember they sold this as horror. I would not have wanted to see a teen comedy. I eventually did see Mean Girls, but it's not like I was feeling I needed to see Mean Girls or many of those high school films of the time. I outgrew that age, but the trailer did have Megan Fox setting her tongue on fire with a lighter and a lot of violence and talking about eating people and bloody bodies, you know, like the two girls at the end when they have blood and gore covering them, all in the trailers, and Megan Fox opening that mouth wide to show those teeth. So I came in expecting a horror film. And you know what? I didn't watch it to hate watch it. I watched it to legitimately watch it and give it a chance. I remember feeling like one of the victims in this film and just, I didn't want to come back, but I'll say this much to preview. No matter what I say about this film, it is not as bad as my memory of this film.
And I think I went in with a different mindset because I hadn't seen it. I have my memories of that trailer, which is very much horror, like you said, Arnie. But again, hearing that, oh, no, this is an underrated gem. This is a cult classic. I actually went in pretty open-minded. I'm like, okay, maybe I judge this unfairly because of Megan Fox being in it, which I don't even think she's really the star. That's the crazy surprise to me as I watched this. But I went in pretty open-minded because of the reputation this film seems to have garnered these days.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's true that if you haven't seen a movie in 10 years, you could always reevaluate it. It will feel different to you. Every 10 years, it's good to check in on things to see. I don't know if we need to check in on this movie per se, but yes, your tastes shift and we have more cultural perspective and maybe something was going on here. Again, if Diablo Cody is some kind of sage about this generation, maybe she ended up making a greater point that we weren't willing to hear because it didn't look like Juno. I'm willing to give that consideration. I'm also willing to recognize that this director, Karin Kusama, has done...
Who?
Yeah, she's done some good work. I liked her film, The Invitation, a lot. It's kind of a home invasion movie from about 6 or 7 years ago. You guys heard of it?
I have heard of that one. I've had it in my Netflix queue for a while. It always, the little title card that comes up on Netflix, it makes it look interesting, but I have not watched it yet.
Yeah, it's a good film. And then I saw her, the film she did with Nicole Kidman, really brutal, called Destroyer. Not really a fun film, but, you know, again, one that says I'm a director to watch. Her first film, Girl Fight, was what put Michelle Rodriguez on the map. It was a girl boxing movie. So tough, edgy. Most of her work is something that, yeah, it would draw my attention to. So this felt like the anomaly. I'm like, well, maybe it's tougher than I was willing to consider. Because when I did see this movie, I largely saw it as the reason why my cubicle mate got fired. And I was kind of glad about that.
So already a recommend. You got rid of a employee that you didn't like working with.
It played like a bad joke to me. And so I didn't really give it consideration as a movie. That's what I'm here to do today. And which cut did you guys see?
I had to check. I saw that there was an unrated cut. And so I had to look it up. And yes, I saw the unrated cut because that's what iTunes had for $4.99.
Yep, right there with you. That's what was offered to me was the unrated one.
Here's how you know. The unrated cut will begin at the institution, the asylum, whereas the rated cut will begin at Jennifer's house.
Thank you. I thought when rewatching this, it didn't start at the asylum. That was my firm memory was... This was not revealed in the version I saw. So I saw the cut version way back when. Okay.
Is it radically different? It sounds like they're adding scenes or shifting stuff around.
Well, it's why I watched the movie 4 times, was I really thought that there was going to be radical differences between uncut and basically things got moved around and certain lines got included or not because they were kind of in poor taste. Diablo Cody trades in that, you know, she likes to be vulgar. And so some lines in the unrated cut didn't make the pass in the theatrical cut. But overall, there is only one scene that I can tell that you would not see at all in the original viewing. The funeral of the goth kid wasn't there.
Okay, thank you. I felt like I would have remembered that scene too because it's really awful.
But by and large, not a great deal of difference. And most shocking of all, if you did come to see Megan Fox's body, the unrated cut will not show you what it's teasing.
Oh, so you, is there nudity in the theatrical one?
I think you were to think that there would be in all cuts.
That's what I figured.
That was, again, there will never be any of that in any version I saw.
I'll admit, I mean, I was buying Maxim for Megan Fox. I'll admit to hoping for a nipple in this movie.
I mean, that's how they sold the movie.
Yeah, it's called Jennifer's Body. I'm being just completely honest. I was, you know, I found her very attractive, and I wanted to see more of Jennifer's body in this movie. Now, the fact that she didn't influence my feeling of this film overall, and it's not going to really impact this review either, but if I'm being completely honest, in 2010, that's one of the reasons I turned this on.
Sure. I mean, they could have had a Black Swan moment in this if they wanted to. Instead,
they kind of do.
What is the original rating of this? Is it PG-13?
No, this was rated R for sexuality, bloody violence, language, and drug use.
Wow, that feels really harsh. I really, like, slow down Hannah Montana on these, like, this is not an R-rated movie.
I don't even remember drug use in this.
Yeah. Not something that I would be hesitant to show 13-year-olds, this movie. It feels like one step more intense than Goosebumps.
I think there's a lot of blood in this movie, but it's not coming out of bodies. You know, it's like on people.
They're vomiting it.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's even blood, but okay. So there's some red liquid lying around. There's the lewd dialogue, but if they can handle Lost Boys, they can handle this movie. The Craft.
They say fuck a lot, and you only get one fuck in the movie for a PG-13.
All right. Well, I'm presuming all our listeners can handle it. Arnie, why don't you give them a plot, and we will get into Jennifer's body.
Megan Fox is high school hottie Jennifer, and Amanda Seyfried is her nerdy best friend Anita, who Jennifer nicknamed Needy. When the two girls go to see indie rock band Low Shoulder, Jennifer seems hypnotized by the band's music. Ignoring Needy's objections, Jennifer gets into a van with the band and they drive off to the woods where the band is going to offer Jennifer as a human sacrifice to Satan. If they sacrifice a virgin, their band will be rewarded with fame and fortune. Unbeknownst to the band, though, Jennifer wasn't a virgin, not even a backdoor virgin, as she points out.
Thanks to Chris Pratt.
Wow. The people that pop up in this.
I know, I couldn't believe that.
So Jennifer doesn't die. Instead, a succubus inhabits Jennifer's body. Jennifer is now able to continue going to school, but to keep her beauty, she has to feed on the bodies of the high school boys. No one, not even Needy, knows Jennifer is the murderer that has brought national news attention to their small town. Needy does, however, notice changes in Jennifer's behavior. The more Needy expresses concern, the more a wedge is driven between the two friends. Needy gets closer to her boyfriend Chip, played by Johnny Simmons, but can't forget about Jennifer as they seem to now have a psychic connection. Whenever Jennifer kills, Needy experiences Jennifer's feelings, even blood on the lips. Through research at her school library's occult section,
it's small,
taxpayer money being used for the occult, Needy realizes Jennifer is a succubus and that she will likely massacre their schoolmates at the school formal.
If this had been a horror movie, she might have.
Needy tells Chip to stay home from the dance as she goes to confront Jennifer. Chip goes to the dance anyway, but encounters Jennifer on his way there, and she tries to seduce him. When he resists, she starts to eat him. Needy feels this through her psychic connection and races to save her boyfriend, but it's too late. Chip bleeds out and dies. Needy goes to Jennifer's house and stabs the demon girl in the heart with a box cutter. Jennifer and the demon are both dead, but Jennifer's mother walks in and sees Needy in the murderous act. Needy is sent to an institution for the criminally insane, but we find out that Needy was bitten by Jennifer and got some of the demon's powers. Able to fly and move things with her mind, Needy breaks out of prison. She goes and murders all the members of Low Shoulder who caused all this chaos to begin with, as credits roll.
Stuart, you called out with this unrated cut that the opening that I'm seeing with Needy in this mental institution, is this new or did this appear somewhere else in the theatrical cut?
It is in the theatrical cut. It's rearranged. They play it after some of the Jennifer scene and some of the other stuff. I'm not sure why. The one thing that is different in this version is the voiceover. Here you hear references to I get more letters than Zac Efron and Dr. Phil combined, and more of a more slangy, I would say, than how it comes off in the theatrical. There was an attempt, I feel like, to Diablo the script in the theatrical version.
And to me, I felt like this opening was a mistake because this movie would have had far more shock had we not known she was going to end up in prison. And a badass bitch kicking guards down and being put in solitary.
Yeah, she's a kicker. K-I-C-K-E-R. Yeah, what's weird to me is when we get to the end, we'll find out, like, she's going to have some powers, too. So now I'm, like, wondering, well, she's been waiting in this institution to escape. It feels weird, like, framing it with this institution stuff because her escape is going to be very easy later on.
I'm just going to be more blunt. I don't understand this movie. I don't understand what it's trying to get across. I don't know who I'm supposed to like. What is the point of Anita having the demon in her and being incarcerated? Are we to see that women's sexuality, are they smart bombs, their tits? Like, are we horrible for objectifying them? Or should women use their bodies to get what they want? I could not tell you what this movie is advocating.
That was my confusion too. Like, are we supposed to look at Jennifer's body or feel bad for looking at Jennifer's body? It feels like they're using their body to get their victims.
I want to point out Diablo Cody, her whole deal, really, the whole reason why she won the Oscar, I think, is because of her personal story. She was a single mom and a stripper, and yet she made it all the way to the top of Hollywood, basically by writing a letter to a director. And so that's kind of remarkable. Like, how did that, what a Cinderella story. Of course, she would have a more liberal idea about being naked and using her body to, you know, entice men. But I feel like this movie, at the same time, is wagging its finger at us and saying, how dare you? How dare men try to salivate over these women?
Yeah, I read, trying to find about its cult status now, that this is a big film of the Me Too era. And I'm like, really? Did they see the same movie I saw? Because I don't see this as a big Me Too-ing.
Yeah, no, all the reviews I read from just regular people that love this film, great feminist film according to them, because I guess you have a female eating dudes. I guess it's kind of a revenge thing. And also a great, in the words of this film, lesbi-gay film. Like, it really hit a note there.
Did it?
That's what people are saying that love this film. Just regular, normal people, when I read their reviews, those are the two things they gravitate towards, is it's gay-friendly and it's feminist.
Again, I was waiting to understand that one. There had been, I mean, this ain't, like, on the cutting edge of that. 2009, we're, like, way past Bound and Wild Things, and by a decade or more. Like, we had gay characters in high school for a long, long time, and I don't feel like they ever quantify what's going on between Anita and Jennifer. And is it powerful? Is it, again, The Craft did this better.
Yeah, and if you're going for that feminist thing, the fact that it's so weird that Needy's boyfriend is going to become a victim of Jennifer. Like, it just, I don't see a consistent through line to really say, yes, this is a great gay lesbian film. This is a great feminist film. Like, there's not a through line anywhere to justify that, I feel.
What I'm going to say is, we can walk through this movie scene by scene, but I can't put it together.
No.
I don't know what the statement is. I don't know what the attempt is. It feels like someone that has a lot of power to get away with whatever she wants and just threw it all on the wall. It's a messy, ugly, stupid film filled with in-jokes and whatever popped into Diablo's head, and it doesn't cohere. And listening to that commentary track, I was leaning in, waiting for her to tell me what she was trying to do in this film, and it was staggering how stupid she sounded, how absolutely foolish she did.
As dumb as her dialogue she writes?
As stupid as her characters, as her, like, I did it because I thought this was funny. I'm like, you have been Emperor's clothes defrocked. Like, you have been totally exposed as a nincompoop. You and Kevin Smith need to crawl away and go back to your 9-to-5 jobs.
So there's no deeper, and listeners out there, grab your favorite alcohol, pour your shot. There's not a deeper meaning of 9/11 in this, because, like, those 9/11 shooters are just there for jokes. There's a box cutter death at the end of this. Like, I was looking for the 9/11 metaphor throughout this film.
Smart bombs.
Yes.
You can write the paper if you want to. In fact, I'm going to sit back and let you write it. I'm not here to say this movie doesn't make sense. I'm saying I can't make sense of it. Other than it's very loud and it's very in your face. And if you get the unrated version, there's even more of it.
What I'll say is the movie is straightforward. I mean, if you are looking for what is its subtext, what is its political statement?
Right.
If it's there, it's murky. But if you're just looking at it as a horror comedy film, it's very straightforward. I have no questions about that.
Yeah, I agree.
I never look at films like that.
It's functional as a movie with a story, but I don't look at Weekend at Bernie's to try to find out what its commentary on 80s financial dealings is, so I'm not going to look too deep into Jennifer's Body.
I think Weekend at Bernie's probably has more to say about that than this has to say about feminism or anything else.
Weekend at Bernie's didn't win an Oscar. When you have been anointed an Oscar-winning writer, people think you have things to say. And they think that you have more to say than, like, I'm going to make some jokes about 9/11 shooters and what have you. Like, this feels like we thought we were, again, it's all just like Kevin Smith to me. We thought you were a genius. We declared you the convenience store poet. Tell us more, you sage philosopher. Give us your wisdom. And then they came out and went and like shat on the ground and said, hee hee. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I have been had. I have been tricked.
Something has really struck a nerve with Stuart. This is great.
Well, no, it's just, again, and that commentary was like my way of being like, this is your last chance to justify any of this. Because otherwise, I wouldn't even say that this was a competent script, much less coming from someone who was great. Like, this is a staggering embarrassment of writing. It's like shocking. And I would want to hide this from anyone who had ever awarded me anything.
So, Stuart, do you recommend Jennifer's Body?
Since we're discussing Diablo specifically, I think when I was looking her up, I think this movie did get her a gig doing rewrites on Fede Alvarez's Evil Dead. But have you seen any movie she's made since then? Because she's continued to write.
Has she made films?
Well, not all of them. She directed something called Paradise. I don't know what that is, but I did know people that worked on the United States of Terra.
Okay, TV.
I did see Tully. There was a movie about a fantasy nanny movie. It's kind of a Mary Poppins.
Oh, she did that one?
Yeah, Young Adult.
Oh, Young Adult was good. I liked that one.
Yeah, Patton Oswalt was really good in that. That was where I discovered him. Yes, I have seen her do better than this.
I watched Ricky and the Flash and didn't care for that, so.
Yeah, I'm here to say that because you shat the bed doesn't mean that you can't pick yourself off, get a shower, and come up with something better. Yes, everything I've seen that she's done is better than what we're here to talk about today. This is the very definition of a sophomore slump. This is something that, again, it feels like I have all the power in the world to do whatever I want, and I have no clue. I haven't seen Mallrats, but I imagine that's what watching that movie is like, too. We're just going to throw in Three's Company cameos with tits and Stan Lee.
Oh, Stan Lee shows up in it. Yeah.
Talking about the things, Dick.
Yeah, masturbatory. Yeah, like I get to go on all my fetishes and you have to sit there and take it. Is my experience with this film. And certainly what I can say without getting to the end of my recommends or not, strong not recommend for listening to that commentary. That commentary is absolutely toxic. You will hate the director and the writer for how little they can justify everything that happens in this movie. I wanted them to explain so much, they said nothing. Crickets. She even gave her the floor and said, Diablo, so many people talk about your language and how you write. Do you have anything to say about that? What? How do you do that? No, it's really hard. I make dark things. Yeah, awful.
Don't watch the commentary, people. It's going to ruin your day.
Back to this movie. And yes, what we are to understand about Anita and why she's caged. Let's just get to the end surprise. She has a demon in her. And maybe that's a good thing or maybe it's not. I'm not really clear.
I take this as the end of the craft, you know? And when we see this at the end, she will use the powers for good, whereas the people from whom she had to take power was using it for evil. I do feel like this is that story told 10 years later.
Another movie I hate it.
Yeah, Needy's going to finally do what I expected to be done during this whole film with her victims. Like, talking about just the structure of this script, we'll get into it.
Yeah, it's garbage. And again, why there might be different cuts of this thing, I don't know. They were trying to fix it, right? They were just trying to figure out where the movie was, because what is this? Once we finally get to it, it's a high school movie. It is Clueless, Saved, Mean Girls. It has the familiar structure of a lot of popular movies of its day. Legally Blonde, like, it's about young women coming of age in a sarcastic comedy.
And like so many teen movies, it's also about the nerdy girl who takes off the glasses and becomes hot.
Right. Here's another big problem with this movie. Amanda Seyfried, okay, she was in Mean Girls. She can more or less do this. You're going to tell me that Megan Fox has a relatable comedian in her and knows how her image is and can play off of that. That is completely exposed as false in this. She has no idea what she's doing, and she can't tell a joke to save her life.
And yet, her acting here is so much better than I have seen her do in any other movie. I honestly think she is okay as Jennifer. I think she might be well cast as a body people would like to look at. The role she plays in this movie is probably a role Megan Fox has played in real life several times. And not eating the men, of course, but you know what I'm saying. And I think this might be the best performance of hers I've ever seen.
Which is not a compliment. I mean, she's never been good.
Yeah, I think she's fine, but, and I mean her acting, people, get your mind out of the gutter. But no, I think she does all right in this film. But for this kind of thing, you have to have a self-awareness, an actress that knows what her image is. And I'm sure Megan Fox knows what her image is, but there's no humor about it with what she does here. It feels like a very not self-aware portrayal of herself.
Yeah, she ought to be having fun getting back at the way that Michael Bay has exploited her, and she's not. She doesn't get it. She's confined presenting her that way. The worst part of this movie is when she has to relate to the other females. Like, it's garbage that she has this long-standing friendship with grade school where they have nothing in common now, but they still hang out together. Is a really cool idea that can't be pulled off because of Megan Fox.
With the rated cut, Stuart, does it also start at the end? Because in the unrated cut, we start by seeing Megan Fox as Jennifer and a really salacious camera angle that's like walking towards the bed with her legs somewhat spread. But then we go to the window and see Amanda Seyfried as Needy outside the window wearing the hoodie from the end of the movie. This is the moment before Needy is going to come in and stab her in the heart. Did you see that in the rated cut?
Yeah, it's the first scene in the rated theatrical viewing. But what they actually, it was the first scene in the script, and in both cuts they decided not to do it. But the first scene was supposed to be you're watching Megan Fox in bed and she gets killed, kind of like Drew Barrymore in Scream. Some woman busts through the window, stabs her with a box cutter, and you go, oh my god. And then everything else is a flashback to understand that it's probably a good thing she's dead, I guess, is what we're going to learn from the story. I don't know.
And was the voiceover, you said that the opening voiceover is just for the unrated cut. What about the rest of Amanda Seyfried's voiceover here about how she and Jennifer were childhood friends and, you know, waving at each other during the cheerleading thing?
Yeah, we can talk about both cuts pretty much in the same way going forward. It's 99% the same movie.
And they're in Devil's Kettle. And they talk about this weird whirlpool that they have near the town that scientists have studied. It water goes down from a waterfall, but nobody can find out where the water goes from there. The movie didn't make it clear. Is this like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer Hellmouth? Did the band have to be in Devil's Kettle in order to do their ceremony? Or is it just a satanic name for the sake of being thematic in this movie? Because that whirlpool never comes back up again.
Well, yeah, we'll see a knife come through it. It never gets explained. But I thought, again, this is telling me horror comedy. Is that we got some scientists and they're going to drop balls. And oh, we don't know where they go. Isn't that wacky? But I thought for sure they're setting up that Megan Fox is going to get dropped down this hole. And that's what's going to turn her into whatever she becomes later on. That's why you introduce this whirlpool that goes to nowhere, right?
Satan would be so pissed that they're dropping down the racquetballs.
There's so many things introduced that never come back or never have an explanation. Actors and just moments that ferrets. I'm flabbergasted by how much is thrown at the wall without justification, including in the commentary. It's just here. It's just here because I can do it. Now, I suppose if I were just watching this, I would think that this was a metaphor for small towns. Like, this is a hole that, like, there's no coming out of this. These people are trapped in a place that, yeah, is its own kind of hell. And you would think that the story would be about these girls trying to break free. Certainly, Megan Fox's character, when we see her, is talking about going to the local club and wanting to see a band from the city. And we have the whole dynamic about how it's cool that someone from the outside has bothered to visit Devil's Kettle.
So it's got to be that town then, and that whirlpool is the whirlpool to hell. That's why they had to do the sacrifice at the whirlpool, because it's made not clear.
No, I think they picked a small town because they need a virgin, and that's the reputation. You know, these small towns, they're all goody-goody Christians. So I thought they were just upping their odds for finding a virgin. I don't know why you think Jennifer is one, though. I know, that's sexist. I'm making assumptions from how she dresses and looks, but, you know.
But she admits, I mean, she's, Chris Pratt is there, and this would be around his time in Parks and Rec, and he is a cop that won't play any role in this movie. You nope. Introduce a cop in Act One, and he never shows up again.
I thought for sure in an unrated cut, we would get him coming back in at least a scene. No.
They make it such a big deal. I have the police around my finger because of this character, but no, nothing.
But he's wearing those sunglasses just like if you've seen Parks and Rec.
Yes.
He and his girlfriend, Aubrey Plaza, have this, like, role-playing thing they do of cop and criminal.
Yes, his FBI agent that he loves, yeah.
Yeah, so he looks just like that with the sunglasses here.
Again, this is a long string of, I don't get why this is here. He isn't doing enough. He offsets the idea that locals are dressing up like hunters and carry guns and are macho and small-minded. And that's why Jennifer is attracted to a glam rock band that has mascara and has neck tattoos of crescent moons.
No, this is just an emo indie band. Come on, there's glam. That's the 80s. This is 2009, Stuart. Low Shoulder. Why would you name your band Low Shoulder? I don't even know what that means.
It's a driving term. I mean, we have them in Illinois where...
I know there's shoulders, but what's a low shoulder?
A low shoulder means you're going to kind of go off the road a little bit if you have to pull on the shoulder.
It did have a different name. I want to say it was Soft Shoulder, but at no point was it a good name. So it's not worth repeating.
No, don't put shoulder in your band name.
Yeah, it's all going to be so they can do a pun at the very end of the movie with a road sign. That's it. Oscar winning.
But the fact that they're content to go to this bar where she can use her smart bombs to get drinks, even though they're very underage, and the cop looks the other way about her drinking in a bar because he did anal with her and all of this. It doesn't feel to me like they're sitting there dreaming about when we get out of this town, which is a trope for a lot of these small town high school movies, is I can't wait to get out of here, especially for Needy. And can I just say, I hate that name for her character because, oh, look, she's Needy.
I don't see that she is that needy. She didn't want to go to this bar. She didn't want to follow her friend. She wanted to be with her boyfriend. She's got other things to focus on. So I don't see that she is the needy friend. I feel like this relationship is not understandable to me. I don't get it.
That's part of my problem with this film is you're telling us these are two best friends, you know, it's doing the whole salt and pepper thing. They're different and one's a cheerleader and one's a nerd, and but they're great friends. I never really understand why, though. Like, everyone thinks they're lesbian gay because they hang out. I don't know. I don't know why they get along.
Okay, if a cheerleader waved to another girl during the routine, I'd think that was weird. I mean, I don't know that I'd jump to them being in a sexual relationship, but it is a little weird. Like, they're way too old for that kind of thing.
But do you understand why they would even be in a relationship if they were lesbians? Like, I don't see what their friendship is built on.
It's a really small town. How many choices do they have?
Maybe that's what it is. I grew up in LA, so yeah, small town issues were not a problem.
I don't see this as a story of two girls that want to be together and can't. Is that what I'm supposed to get from this?
No, that's the thing.
Yeah, because Needy's really into her boyfriend, it feels like.
It's not like Needy gets jealous when Jennifer goes up and flirts with the band guy. Needy only gets protective when she overhears the band guy talking about how he's excited that she's a virgin, with the implication he's going to pop her cherry. I mean, Needy was perfectly fine with the fact that, you know, she was doing anal with Chris Pratt. So I don't understand if the whole thing was one of them wanted a romantic relationship. It's not coming clear. And it seems to me like both of them might want a romantic relationship. I don't know.
Here's what I can say that Diablo Cody spoke to. She wanted to put out a movie in which underage kids have sex. She said that's when your body looks the best. Kids should be out there fucking. And so she liked to throw back the morality of the horror movie where virginity is some kind of pass in surviving. She wanted to make an anti slasher mentality and have very sexually experienced, even the nerd girl has lots of sex, and that should not be how you define them. Great, fine.
Yet all the victims are going to be dudes that want to have sex with Jennifer.
I feel like the judgment that is made in this movie, the morality thing, is she goes off in a van with some dudes, right? That's why she becomes monster, that they somehow corrupt her.
Well, here's the thing. She didn't have the choice of going off with them. I don't know how. They're not going to explain how. During the concert, she becomes, like, hypnotized.
Well, because rockers have mystique.
So she doesn't choose to get in that van. She is under some kind of thrall.
Right, yeah, but again, that's all metaphor for the power of emo rockers. And I can't say, this part does feel very real. I do remember when I moved to Chicago, I became friends with some people, and I very specifically was thinking about a woman I knew who would go to all of these indie rock shows that are, no bigger than Melody Lane here. It's like the size of a couple tables, and just fawn over all these guys who, you know, never really went anywhere, but they sang this kind of emo rock that just, there is something truthful about this. I feel like if this movie could just get to the idea that the connection between rock music and fans and what it can do to people and hypnotize them, that would be enough for me.
My question is, does Low Shoulder start the fire? Like, this yes. feels, I'm not sure when the Great White, you know, that band, that fire broke out.
No, they're playing off of that. It's 7 years before the hard rockin' band Great White burned down a nightclub, and they had to change pyrotechnic rules for every concert you've ever been to since.
Yeah, they're going to try to do the funny, really tasteless version of that. I feel like we're supposed to be laughing as people get trampled, but I don't even understand why this fire starts. We see Needy, like, look over and just watch this fire, like, go up a curtain and across the rafters. No one else sees this, but did the band do that? Like, I rewound it a few times and I can't tell, like, what started this fire.
Did they happen to mention in the commentary, were they trying to pay homage to De Palma? Because when we see Needy following this fire up to the rafters and things, it reminded me of Amy Irving and Carrie when she sees the rope that's going up to the bucket of blood.
Yeah, they do mention Carrie quite a bit and De Palma, and I do think that that was a reference point for them. Yes. Thinking about the girl who was, in that case, she was virginal and she hadn't had experience, and yet she had this monster in her. This is, in some ways, an update, but I just take it because the fire seems to be snaking away from the amps and all of that, that quite literally, it was probably an electrical spark or something that started it. And then, yes, if you take the idea that these boys are into Satanism and rituals, they wanted to create a fire that would separate their virgin from everyone else and they could swoop her away.
Yeah, there must be something to their Satanism for why Jennifer falls under that spell. I mean, it's not normal for a band to have somebody, you know, become nonverbal, hypnotized to their music the way Jennifer does here.
And it just plays so weird. Like, here's this big tragedy. People have died. The place is still on fire. Hey, come hang out with the band. Come fuck us. Like this isn't real life. And I get it. This is Satanism and maybe some hypnotism going on, but it's very jarring feeling. Like, why would someone just go hang out with this band as the club is still burning down?
I am convinced the reason why there are two cuts is because they were trying desperately to find the balance between what was frightening and what was funny. And you will hear on that commentary, these women insist, well, this is so scary. This part is too scary and blah, blah, blah. And we had to change it and lighten it up and make it more funny. This movie ain't scary and this movie ain't funny.
There's nothing scary in this.
No.
I didn't laugh and I didn't get frightened by any of it. It is nonsensical is what this movie is.
I feel like I know where they wanted the laughs to be, but I was not laughing.
I'll agree. I didn't laugh once. I sat there like an alien going, so this is what they consider humor, just without finding anything funny. But I'm going to just put out there, Stuart, it sounds like you're angry, not just at the commentary, which I could understand, but angry at this movie. Nothing here is enraging me. It just is letting me down for, you know, what is this cult classic saying about small towns thus far? What is this cult classic saying about women, either lesbian, gay, or having early teenage sex or drinking underage? Doesn't seem to be anything.
Right. And I think you can probably go with that better than I can. You give an award to someone and say they're a great writer, and then they are revealed to have nothing to articulate. Literally nothing to say. That makes me very angry.
Yeah, and I will say I'm not angry during the film because I'm trying to figure out the 9/11 metaphor. I'm trying to figure out the feminism metaphor. I'm trying to figure out all the metaphors where this may be going that's made it a cult classic. And it's when I get to the end, I'm like, oh, there is no metaphor.
I want to stress, you watched this movie once. I saw it four times in a row. So yes, things are going to calcify. Things that like rolled off of me on the first viewing, now I'm just like, but god damn it, why does he only have one arm? Like, this is just, yeah, everything becomes more and more infuriating the more you look. And so that's why going through this film is so frustrating.
Now, people change and opinions change as we learn. But Stuart, I remember saying when we were watching Twin Peaks in high school that I really wanted to know why Donna's mother is in a wheelchair. And you were like, but don't you get it? You don't know. That's real life. Not everything has an explanation. And so why do you need to know that J.K. Simmons has a hook for a hand?
Because in a comedy, you give someone a hook hand as a joke. Go to Hot Tub Time Machine with Crispin Glover. Like, that is a joke. We're waiting for the punchline. So, yeah, if I'm watching something that's surreal or actual horror, I don't necessarily always need an explanation. But a comedy, and I think they're trying to make this comedic, you have punchlines in comedy. So hook hand is the setup. Now, what's the punchline? Oh, you don't have a punchline. There is no joke here.
Yes. When you look at something like Lynch is showing you like to take a deep look at what seems normal and see how strange and unexplainable that really is. The impulse is to almost like pick boogers and, you know, look at them and maybe taste them. You know, like there's something navel gazing about that work. Here, again, I'm struggling to even understand what the intent is. But yes, let's go with the idea that this is a broad comedy where everything is so funny. I feel like it is just careening for laughs, and it is just grabbing at random at lewdness as a last ditch, you know, life preserver to keep them from going completely under. Like, I feel like this movie doesn't have a good sense about what it wants to do other than, for some reason, give a middle finger to somebody that might presume that these are virgins. Like, that seems to be the biggest issue for Diablo Cody, is how dare you think that this nerd or this hot girl is what you think they are sexually.
But the fire at the club doesn't seem to be that big of a deal for Needy, and neither does Jennifer. Jennifer gets in the van, goes off. Needy just gets in their Sebring and goes home.
That's why, again, I'm looking for the 9/11 metaphor. Is this how, like, we just don't care anymore? Like, we see this tragic thing happen and then just go home. Like, I was really stretching looking for something. But we do get this horror moment where, yeah, Needy's at home and the doorbell rings and no one's there, and then Jennifer's gonna show up and puke black goo that like moves around or something. And why? Like, that never came up again. I thought maybe it would like form into some goo monster.
No, it literally came up again later on.
Yeah, she'll puke again, but like, why animate it? Like, what was the purpose of that?
She's a demon.
Oh, that's the purpose? Black goo being vomited is demonic enough.
There is no reason why she needs to be vomiting on the linoleum floor at this point. She ate some Boston Market.
I will go with metamorphosis. You know, she is turning into a demon. She feels hunger. We're going to find out later that she is hungry as a succubus. She's in Needy's refrigerator, just trying to eat whatever she can. And because she's no longer human, human food makes her puke.
So she's like Venom? Is that her Simbonite that she's puking out?
Right. And we don't know it yet, but she already has killed someone. We will find out when the story is told later that the exchange student from India that everyone thought burned up in the wreckage actually was just trying to walk home, and she's already had her first band snack. The reason why she's covered in blood is she ate him.
And what's most infuriating about that scene is there's a joke earlier on when they're at the club. Oh, do you think he's circumcised? And they're wondering about his dick. Like, I thought we'd at least find out if he was circumcised or not when she attacked him.
Yeah, there's an objectification of men that, again, is that revenge? Like, haha, we're going to talk about your cucumbers now and eating them. Is that what you're trying to get at? Is this some kind of, like, gender payback for the way horror movies have exploited tits and blood? I don't know.
From the reviews I read online, that's what people who champion this film feel.
But where was the dick? Where was the scene where she bit into the cucumber? Like, I feel like then you got to deliver on that. Like, what are you doing? Again, if this comes off as anything, it feels like a Boston Market joke of like, haha, she ate some Boston Market leftovers and puked. Okay. Sure.
And I am glad they showed us Amanda Seyfried cleaning up the goo, because I was like, is that just going to be left for somebody's mother? I mean, there needed to be some explanation there.
I mean, there is a whole Needy's mother storyline that goes nowhere, if that's what you're getting to.
Amy Sedaris is in this for a scene.
One line, I think she gets. One. She had a bigger role in Elf.
And again, these are not got cut out, and it's only in the theatrical, but we understand it in the unrated cut. There is just no justification, and the writer herself has nothing to say about it.
Well, let me go to another movie that this made me think of then, that I think we relate to more, again, maybe because of our age. But when we go to school the next day, and Needy is there concerned, and everybody starts mourning the fire, and J.K. Simmons comes in as a teacher. Was this post-Whiplash? Is this a joke on Whiplash?
No.
No, this was before.
Way before. 5 years before.
Okay, because it does seem like a joke that he's this one-handed, overly emotional, trying to connect with the kiddies teacher.
I did get kind of an internal laugh. I didn't do anything out loud, but I thought his wig was funny looking.
Yeah, still has the bald spot on it, but I start thinking about Heathers, where the teachers are trying to relate to the students after one of the students supposedly commits suicide. Yes. I'm really getting a big Heathers vibe off of this. And you don't get this angry at Heathers.
Because it's not as good as Heathers. I mean, this is tonally all over the place. And I haven't revisited Heathers. Maybe it's not going to hold up either. But don't tell me that they're the same thing. This is someone that, again, lazily saw all the things I did, Lost Boys, Craft, and Heathers, is now saying, well, this is the same thing. No, you ate that and then shat it out and then are telling me that's the same thing. You didn't craft this at all. There's no craft here. The things are just happening.
But if you hadn't grown up with Heathers, if it didn't hit at your time, then wouldn't these scenes of students mourning and teachers' platitudes and things maybe connect a little bit with you about, like, yeah, this is what high school is like?
If this movie, and this movie is almost depleted of adult characters, were about parents just don't understand, yes, that would be a very relatable teen movie. We would understand that, yeah, these two girls couldn't be who they wanted to be because their parents had expectations and or something. But I don't see that the parents of Needy or Jennifer are a factor at all. What we have is one goofy teacher who comes in to do bits, play the clueless authority figure.
I actually wrote in my notes at one point, does Jennifer have a mother? Jennifer's parents are not a factor. Jennifer is going out to clubs, getting drunk, eating boys. I mean,
her mom becomes important at the very end when she walks in and catches Needy.
Only to make sure that Needy gets thrown in jail. That is, again, this is how you write when you don't know how to write. This is exactly what a first draft looks like from someone that's never written a script before would write. It feels like something Diablo Cody made before she ever attempted Juno. And before she ever took a class in screenwriting.
They were written around the same time, she said, so it is very possible that this was a script that came before Juno or before Juno on screen for sure.
Yeah, no, it feels definitely like lying around, somebody do something with this.
But I feel like it's just functional storytelling when Jennifer goes and kills the jock who's mourning his friend in the football field.
Yeah, Jonas, her first victim that we'll see, the Indian exchange student was earlier, but that we'll be showing that in flashback. But what is his sin? Like, what did he do? He wasn't gazing at Jennifer's body. He's mourning his bro that's died. Like, if this is a great feminist revenge film, shouldn't these kills mean something? Shouldn't the victims be awful and guilty of something?
They're football players. That's enough. Like, in this world.
No. I agree with Jacob. In fact, this is the opposite of the sin and die horror movie. This succubus seduces good people and sweet people into bad situations and then kills them. It's like telling boys, don't be tempted by the sex pot or you'll die.
But I agree with Stuart. It's because he's a jock. Like, again, reading why people love this online. Oh, she's getting revenge on all these boys. Like, that's, I guess, all it takes is that they're male, and yes, the implied baggage that comes with being a jock and that kind of attitude, which, you know, when I was in high school, I had my opinions of what jocks were like, but this film, in a film, you got to tell me what this character's like. I'm not going to just assume stereotypes, because that's awful script writing.
You mentioned Heathers, and there is a big storyline about how football players are framed as gay lovers in that, and it's kind of played as this larky joke or whatever. Again, Diablo Cody knows what movie she's trying to make. She saw it. But you can't reconstruct it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I thought of, too, with this was the whole I love my gay dead son bit with the date rapist football players.
Did your cut have the guy from Coach in the stand, like, do the whole monologue? Like, that's only in the extended cut. But you have for just one scene, yeah, the guy from Coach, the dumb football blonde guy.
Yes.
Do a whole thing about how he's going to castrate the person responsible, implying that he thinks it's a man or whatever. We'll never see this dad again. We'll never see him get justice.
Yeah, and again, I thought that was going to be part of the commentary of this film, that, oh, they all think it's a man when it's really a woman.
How could it not be?
But my question is, forget about this dad that never shows up again. Why do woodland creatures gather around when she's about to eat someone?
I don't know. Because it's funny.
I thought they'd make a Disney joke, you know? Like, this is reminding me of one of those Disney princesses where they start singing and the animals come out, the squirrels and everything.
I'm right there with you, Arnie. I'm like, okay, this is like Snow White or whatever. But again, bad comedy. No punchlines to these setups. I need punchlines for a comedy.
Rare compliment. I do like it when she goes and kills the jock. The visual effect of the teeth is just quick enough that it doesn't scream bad CGI. And
sure it does. Sure it does, Arnie. Why are you giving that a compliment? It looks exactly like bad CGI.
Yeah, it looks like bad CGI, but I'm willing to go with this. If this is the film that she's going to, you know, grow an extended jaw and eat people.
Right. If it's a B movie about, you know, girls biting into people, then it doesn't have to have good special effects. But what is it?
Yeah, except there's only like two victims in this whole film. It's oof.
What is this movie? Yeah. And again, I'm looking again. My anger is largely coming from last viewing. I'm listening to Diablo to tell me anything about this. And she makes a big point about how the ferret represents the specter of the male gaze or whatever when we cut to Anita.
The ferret that we see one time?
Yeah. And that apparently Eli Roth told her to cut it because it was stupid. And so she wouldn't.
Wait, it represents the male gaze? Was it crawling between her boobs or something? How do you get that?
I guess it's kind of phallic because it's long. I mean, who knows?
You really do hate Diablo Cody more than I do. If you're saying Eli Roth is smarter, you hate Eli Roth too. That's the only reason we haven't covered Hostel is I can't convince you to watch Eli Roth.
Or Cabin Fever.
And if you're saying they had better ideas.
I didn't say they had better ideas. I said he knew it, that this was stupid, and so she insisted on keeping it.
Because a guy told her to cut it? It was revenge on males?
I mean, again, what are you trying to do? You just want to sit. I mean, I've done this. I've been a TA in screenwriter classes. You throw out the draft, and you sit there, and then you ask the person, tell me what you're trying to do. It's not happening here. Tell me what you are trying to accomplish, and we can start from there. But what you are doing right now is wandering aimlessly from bad idea to half-formed idea with no success of laughs or scares.
And meanwhile, we're going to just cut randomly to Jennifer skinny dipping alone because let's show some leg and let's show naked back. I mean,
the opening scene of the trailer
yes,
was this.
Yes. Like,
but this film is against that? Maybe? I don't know.
For a movie made by a lot of women, there's a lot of male gaze going on here. And I don't understand why we have this moment at all, other than, look, you guys wanted to see Megan Fox naked. Here, look, she's naked here. We're not going to show you anything, but we're going to have an insert scene of her wet and swimming, just like Michael Bay would do for no reason.
I wonder what Diablo Cody feels like about her stripping career. Like, I feel like she is loath to say that it's wrong that men have ogled her body and objectified her, that she saw herself as powerful by being able to command their gaze and their attention. So I feel like she is in line with this demon. Like, this is not a bad demon. What Jennifer is doing is not bad. We should be rooting for it, I think.
So when Jennifer says the tits on their chest are smart bombs, Diablo Cody means that because she used her smart bombs to get a lot of money as a stripper. I mean, I'm asking if that's what you mean.
I think so. I don't know.
I think that may be a belief she has. It doesn't come through in this film. And look, I'm fine with that. If you want to make a funny horror film that takes advantage of how dumb men are when a pair of boobs are set in front of them, like we just shut our minds off, great, do that. That's not this film, though.
No, it's not this film. Again, there's so much about this maybe lesbian relationship, or I don't even understand the quote-unquote friendship that's happening, and the fact that Anita has Chip and doesn't seem to like Jennifer anymore or want to hang with her, like, makes it all the more weird.
Yeah, I don't understand why the two fell apart. Just to jump ahead, at the end of this movie, they're going to talk about how they were never friends and how Jennifer was always trying to undermine Needy and things. Are we supposed to retroactively look at this movie and realize they were frenemies this whole time? Because I don't get that in these scenes.
That's what I was saying. They didn't set up the relationship well enough at the beginning for me to be able to make any judgment when these revelations come later.
I can say this much. When we get those early scenes and we see Jennifer look at Chip, she resents him. How dare you take Anita away from me? She would rather be home with you. And so I'm going to just say lewd things like, it smells like Thai food in here. Have you been fucking? And pushing, literally pushing Anita into the wall.
There's your R rating right there, FYI.
Yeah, I guess. These things don't ever register with me. So I would be a terrible parent because I would let small children be exposed to that with no problem whatsoever. That to me is not in any way adult. But her shoving her into the wall and pushing her around to me says, yes, I'm in control here. And it's not that Anita is needy. It's that I don't want Anita to have an identity outside of my shadow. You'll wear what I want you to wear. You'll be my, you know, wing woman while I try to get the boys.
Yeah, Jennifer, awful character. And yet this is supposed to be our feminist get revenge on boys icon,
I guess. And again, there's also one flashback. We see them in the sandbox as very small girls. And what I hear is that Anita always has to be the ugly doll and that Jennifer has to be beautiful, and then hurts her hand on a nail or something and Anita sucks the blood out. Tell me what that is. I have no idea.
They definitely want to play with some lesbian imagery.
Don't suck on a finger, though. That's phallic.
Well, yes, but
I get what you're saying.
You know, and I'm going to say it's probably not in vogue anymore in the post-Me Too era to try to titillate audiences by watching girls suck each other's fingers and things, but it was more acceptable in 2009 to try to turn people on with a little girl on girl.
I mean, Wild Things was 10 years before that. Like, this was way beyond that. That's stale.
It's not like it gets old to watch it.
No, I'm just saying it's just not cutting edge.
No, I'm not saying it's cutting edge. I'm saying it's trying to feed the base.
This high school should not be shocked that there are lesbians among them. Period.
Yeah, it's 2009. I mean, even in small towns, come on.
They would have Rainbow Coalition groups. This would not even be an issue.
Not in small towns. Legitimately, having lived in a small town when I watched this, a very small town with a population of 2,000, no Rainbow Coalitions.
Okay, that's a really small town.
But it doesn't seem like the one student who called them lesbigay is anything but mean. I mean, it's not like she's shocked. She's just mean all the time. Later on, when Needy starts calling out how the band was not heroes and didn't save anyone, it's going to be the same girl who's shouting at Needy about how she's just mean and stupid. It's just she's a mean girl, and she's going to live throughout the movie. No girls will be harmed other than Jennifer.
Yeah, the problem is, just like with Jennifer and Needy's relationship, they don't really set up. They don't set up this small town, except, I don't know, a cop will fuck you in the ass, maybe. Like, there's a whole bunch of emo kids, so it can't be that much homophobic of a town. Like, we don't know what the jocks are like, even though I guess they just deserve to die. They don't tell me anything about this town. They'll get their little jokes in there, how they think it's so great that Low Shoulder is going to give them 3% of what they make off of his single, but so they're kind of like rubes, but I don't get a feeling for any characters, really, or this town as a character.
What we would expect about high school life in 1989, when Heathers comes out, has nothing to do with 20 years later what would be going on here with Jennifer's body. None. It just doesn't. It's not even relevant anymore. And all of Diablo Cody's ideas are too old, too passé, and taken from other movies that are decades old.
And better.
Yes.
But again, to go back, what you mentioned, the goths, what did Colin do to anybody?
He invited Jennifer to watch a Sylvester Stallone movie, supposedly.
No. He invited her to Rocky Horror in a public place.
Yes, I know, but that's the joke. She doesn't like boxing movies. And again, if the writing was better, if Megan Fox had a more self-awareness, maybe.
There you go. She delivered that poorly.
Yeah, I don't watch boxing movies. And then she turns around and walks away with Needy. I know it's not a boxing movie. Like, something to know she's not that dumb.
Yeah. Again, my problem is if you had a Kathleen Turner or an Angelina Jolie or a femme fatale who was really loving, just like, again, ball busting. Like, every move you guys make and you think you're conning me, I've got you guys. I've seen plenty of movies where the femme fatale is the person you're rooting for. I ain't rooting for Jennifer. I don't want her to eat people. I don't like her. I don't like the way she treats her girlfriends. Gross. She's disgusting. Get her off the screen.
And again, Jennifer is not even the main character to me at this point. Like, that is the shock. This is about Needy and her finding, I don't know, something out about herself, I guess, according to Diablo Cody, maybe. Like, but I don't feel like this is about Jennifer. She is the monster that's lurking in the corners every once in a while.
Agreed. But Megan Fox was a bigger star than Amanda Seyfried at the point, so.
Yeah.
Only in that year. This, I just want to point out, Amanda Seyfried, Oscar nominated this year for Mank. Where is Megan Fox?
Agreed. And I mean, at this point, I knew Amanda Seyfried from Big Love when I was watching this. So I had more respect for Amanda Seyfried coming into this than I did Megan Fox. But again, I just don't understand why this goth kid deserves to die if we're saying that men are bad to women, and because she gives him a bad address. And again, it's not like he's trying to date rape her or even sleep with her. He invites her to Rocky Horror.
We could see what happened to Jennifer as a metaphor for rape. She gets penetrated by a knife, like obvious symbolism there. But yeah, like you said, Colin isn't trying to force himself on her. He's willing to watch Aquamarine maybe with her. That truly awful movie.
Yeah, that was a laugh because, again, another Fox movie. I know what that is. It's Splashed with JoJo.
Oh, you do? Oh, that's a shock to me.
Oh, yeah. No, Splashed with JoJo in it. Like, yes. That's really. But again, like the joke gets ruined because she has to make a joke about sushi and fucking through a blowhole or something.
Yeah, because I'm like, that's not what the movie's about.
You are just a terrible comedian. But what I get from the commentary, I'll just go with that, is why we are wanting Colin dead is because he's such a poser with his affectations of goth and whatever. He's annoying and he thinks he's so cool, but he's not. And of course, he is trying to crouch in on Chip as well. You know, like he is hitting on initially Anita. It would be so much easier if Anita didn't have Chip. I feel like the problem is Anita has a boyfriend and doesn't need any of the rest of this movie.
No, if she's supposed to be so lesbi-gay, I keep using that term because it's in the movie, for Jennifer, then why is she having sex with Chip? I mean, neither of these women come off as especially gay to me. Maybe bi, but not gay.
And if they were, what's the point? What's the conflict? Has someone been telling them they can't, other than that one girl in the gymnasium? Like, I don't see the oppression. I don't see the adults. I don't see the small-mindedness of the town. Where is this coming from?
But more, where is the psychic connection coming from between the two girls all of a sudden during this moment? Needy is having sex, Jennifer is feeding, and Needy no longer can enjoy the sex because she's psychically watching the feeding occur.
Yeah, she sees blood dripping from the ceiling. None of again, if she was bit or clawed earlier by Jennifer, maybe this, I could buy it. Okay, it's that psychic connection's linking up because she's got part of a demon in her too. But that all comes later.
I don't have answers for you guys. I have no idea.
And Diablo doesn't have any answers, apparently.
I don't like another scene I don't like. I guess the point is, if you're arguing that this is a movie about two women in love, Anita can't enjoy sex with Chip because she's still thinking about Jennifer and somehow knows that she's killing. She always knows when she's killing a boy. She can sense it or something like that. Maybe she can taste it. I don't know if underdeveloped. I don't know why, but we have a scene where Jennifer is jumping around atop her car and it's spinning out. And again, are we to worry that Jennifer is going to hurt Anita? Is that a fear that we're supposed to have? I never think that.
I think so.
Why would she at this point if they're still kind of friends?
I don't get it. Lost Boys. Let's go to Lost Boys, because that's the closest I can get to on that. Has a homoerotic subtext of Jason Patrick's being sucked into this boys' club, and they're kind of cool, and yeah, they kind of go with women, but they're kind of into each other as well, and it's a affront to the rest of the family, and I understand the dynamic there. And so Amanda Seyfried's kind of like the Corey Haim in this scenario of like, why are you acting this way? I want you to be straight and narrow, quite literally, and I'm not getting that from this movie. This is, again, Diablo Cody saw a movie, tried to emulate it, but didn't seem to understand it.
The worst scene in the movie, and I didn't remember it from my first viewing, and now you tell me, Stuart, it wasn't there, is the funeral for the goth guy. That scene is utterly painful, with two goths like screaming about their dead friend and then the mother giving a speech about having a monopoly on pain.
I thought the emo kids going all emo, again, I never laughed out loud. I'm like, oh, okay, that's intellectually, that's kind of funny. But yeah, when that mom jumps in, she's like, I'm going to one-up you with your pain. I'm like, okay, this is dumb.
And describing her son as looking like lasagna with teeth, his mangled body. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, now you're trying to do Heathers. And I love my dead gay son. Like, yeah, I remember that movie too. And this ain't it.
See, and the goths acting over goth at a funeral would be funny if that had been set up as the tone of the movie, was we're going to mock the social cliques and stereotypes. Right. But this is the only scene that ever does it.
Again, what does she understand about high school? How long has she been since she's been in high school? Same as us.
Yes.
Nothing. The answer is nothing. She doesn't understand these kids.
Yeah, because after Jennifer attacks the car, which is so confusing because I thought she was going after boys, but it feels like now she's going after Needy. Maybe she's jealous or wants to tear Needy away from boys. I think that's what it is, because soon after that attack, this is, I'm not going to bite you, and they're going to kiss. And wow, they're really going to, again, for not wanting to objectify women or play into the male gaze, they really just let that lesbian kiss linger.
And get on top of each other in bed.
Yes.
And is it that Needy is under Jennifer's thrall, the way Jennifer was under the band's thrall? Or is it this is what Needy has wanted all along and Jennifer is teasing her? Or is it that Jennifer also wanted it? This movie's not going to make that clear to me.
Or does Diablo Cody know that this is what turns guys on and she's really only doing this lesbian thing just as that kind of tease for the male audience that she is courting here? Like, I don't see this as feminist in any way. I see this very much as, how can I keep men looking at my projects?
I really want to know. I legitimately do. And listeners, please come to the Facebook group and tell me. Because if this is a movie for the Me Too era that is really being embraced, to me, this seems like the kind of movie that would be canceled for these close-ups of the two girls' tongues rolling over each other. The only reason I can see that is to entice male viewers and to get teenage erections going on. This is not needed for the plot. This does not advance character. And it's not explored enough to the point where this is helping with character development.
No, this feels exploitative, not exploring.
Yes.
And again, if this were an Eli Roth movie, I think it would be canceled. I think it's only because Diablo Cody can coast on, I'm an Oscar-winning writer who speaks in an important female voice, that she can get away with this shit.
I did notice that Jennifer does start to laugh during the makeout session, and that's what kind of breaks the spell and gets Needy to roll off of her. But again, I can't tell, and maybe this is a Megan Fox performance issue,
Yes.
But I can't tell if this was supposed to be teasing and a power play for Jennifer to say, see, you actually want me more than you want Chip. I don't know.
I feel like in all of these, yes, in a lot of the classic gay stories, you could look at the idea that we talked about this with Top Gun as a subtext. Like, those men were competitive in a way because they wanted each other, but Kelly McGillis and the airplanes are the prize. Yes, maybe they're arguing about who's going to end up with which boy when really they would be happy going home together. This is not a movie that's going to really explore that. But yes, that is always a subtext of the homoerotic story, is that sexual conquest with the other gender is an attempt to make the friend jealous. I guess she kind of liked Colin. I mean, that's what you have to acknowledge, is that Anita kind of was half crushing on him. They shared a class. She thought he was cool. She said as much. Now but she didn't have anything for the football player. So that was just a kill. I don't know. The other thing we've been told is that Jennifer can only keep her looks if she keeps eating. So some of this is about her own vanity and being pretty. She can't be pretty if she doesn't have a steady diet of meals.
So is that like saying a girl feels like she won't be popular if she doesn't sleep with guys? Is that what that's saying?
It could have been saying that, but I don't think it knows what it's saying. And I definitely think that because of what Stuart said from the commentary track.
Again, I was waiting for someone. The only thing that Diablo Cody got up on a soapbox about and said, I want Americans to understand this and whatever, was when we have this flashback and she says, Ahmet is the mistreated foreigner in this country because we don't acknowledge that they're alive.
And that's why I thought there was a 9/11 thing going throughout this, like looking at how this small town reacts to this attack on their nightclub. Like,
oh, boy.
Yes. No. What's so... Lots of things are confusing about this. But another confusing thing, when we do get this flashback, we find out Low Shoulder, they need to do a virgin sacrifice to please the devil so they could be as big as Maroon 5. I thought that was kind of funny. But they don't sacrifice a virgin, but they still get all the rewards from it. Like, shouldn't they not be getting all these proceeds from their single? Shouldn't they not be as big as Maroon 5 because they picked the wrong victim?
Yeah, they're going to write it away. I mean, Needy's going to see in the book that if it's not a virgin, you may still get your wish, but you've raised a succubus who doesn't even want to find you and kill you. I mean, that would make sense to me, is if you made the mistake, you may get what you asked for, but you also, like the movie It Follows, she should be targeting them and like following them to eat the guys who killed her. Then you got a standard revenge flick, but... No, she doesn't give a shit about Low Shoulder.
It's the monkey paw. That's what this film should be about, her going after the band. Sure, maybe they get rich, but they're all going to get murdered soon after they make their money. But she doesn't seem to care. She's going to go to what we're told is a buffet at the Spring Formal and just eat everyone in the town.
And yet no one dies. Yeah, we thought we were going to get the ending of Carrie, and I guess it's the part of this movie's sense of humor is that it set us up for that, and then it happens at a pool that never got established, that's run down, or...
Yeah, I don't understand this.
Somewhere that's near in a park? Just random?
And again, your feminist film, female power, yay, but now we're going to have girls backstabbing girls and going after their guy. That doesn't... seem like a big feminist thing.
That's what makes Jennifer, like, we want to see her down, is that she didn't have Anita's back ever. She was trying to steal her toys in the sandbox, and now she's trying to steal her boys.
Why did Needy go along with that? As you've mentioned, she had a boyfriend and things. It's not like this was her only friend or only social connection.
Didn't Needy get the demon? Like, wouldn't it make a whole lot more sense if Needy was the mousy girl that suddenly had a demon in her and suddenly could fight back against this kind of meanness?
Yes.
That I can get, but I don't get why you get the bitch that was already in the controlling position to get more power over her. I don't get that. But again, all of this just feels like references and jokes, like laughing that it's a Bowie knife and singing 8675309 Jenny. And again, these are just like dumb ideas that don't cohere.
And they're a band. They can't sing that song in tune.
I feel like Diablo Cody would do well to write a movie. Maybe that's what Ricky and the Flash was about, but about rock scenes. Like, I feel like that would be, she has a lot more to say about that than she does about the horror genre or high school, apparently. Like, this, write about your strip club. Like, I don't feel like you've got a handle on high school in 2009 at all.
And yet high schoolers in 2009 are the ones who apparently have made this a cult classic. You know, again, somebody could watch Dream a Little Dream and say that the people who made that didn't understand high schoolers in 1989, but it spoke to me and a lot of people my age.
Of course. I still think there's a reason why many people could have very much enjoyed this movie, but it has nothing to do with the screenplay construction or what's satisfying about watching this drama play out. It's not fun to watch Jennifer, period. In any moment in this movie, I don't want her to see her kill, be killed, work it out with Anita, or get vanquished by Anita. Like, nothing. I don't want Jennifer's body or presence anywhere near this because it's a killer.
What really, I'm going to say, pissed me off, though, is now we're in the last half hour of the movie. It's time for the spring formal. They're hanging the signs. Needy and Chip are talking about going. And how is this climax not at the dance? That's what you do. That's why you have a dance.
She eats everyone, right? You got to have Needy fight Jennifer as Jennifer's eating the prom king.
Yeah, that's Carrie for sure. You definitely have to have the humiliation and revenge.
This is a horror movie. I need some kills. We had like three kind of weak kills, and this movie's almost over.
Nothing about this makes any sense, starting with the fact that she's dressing in a Molly Ringwald pretty in pink, ugly-ass dress, but has told her boyfriend not to go.
Yeah, no, she says she's not going, and then she's got a full-on dress ready to go.
Why is she going to kill Jennifer?
Yeah, she's going to stop Jennifer from killing people at the dance.
Why would she do that in a prom dress?
Because she'd look weird if she walked into prom in camo?
Plenty of movies have that. The girl goes to get the guy or confront whoever at prom, goes in regular clothes. This, to me, you're giving me mixed signals here. Like, don't go to the prom, but I got my dress ready to go.
Totally mixed signals. Yeah, and he's going too, but not with her or anyone else. Just terrible. I mean, this is just terrible.
And he's walking to prom, and so Jennifer knows this and stops him on the way.
Again, I think Anita knows every time Jennifer hones in on one of her guys. And I think we're to understand that even though she was in a committed relationship with Chip, she also liked Colin. So that's why Jennifer went after Colin. Don't know about the football player. But yeah, Jennifer's going to get Chip because she knows Anita wants him.
Yeah, and don't worry about Chip. His mom gave him pepper spray. They set that up. At least I guess there's payoff for that.
And I guess Chip is kind of always wanted her as well. You know, an early comment was that Jennifer would only date the lead singer in the band, not the drummer. He's established as a marching band with the snare drum. And so there's got to be, on some level, you know, it's Megan Fox. There's a certain level of fantasy of like, I can get with a woman like that. But he doesn't actually cheat with her, does he? I can't even tell.
No, he pulls back. He tries to be loyal to his girlfriend.
Yeah, I feel like there's no betrayal here.
He kisses her a few times. We saw Needy kiss her a few times, so I don't understand.
Yeah, they kiss, but Chip feels bad about it, and that's when Jennifer attacks him.
Yeah, who is Chip in this movie? I don't even begin to understand what he's wanting, thinking, or doing, and don't care that he's dead.
He's about as well-defined as his character, young Neil, in Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, the fact that Needy doesn't save her boyfriend tells me this movie's really just nihilistic. Or we're not going to allow anybody to live.
Yeah, good word. Yeah, Diablo just likes to, you know, give you the middle finger. And it's very juvenile of like, whatever you think's going to happen, you think it's going to be a massacre at the prom, I tell you there's going to be all this bloodshed. Nope, it's going to be at some random pool and only one person's going to die. And it means the girl doesn't have a boy at the end. Is that empowering? I don't know.
But Stuart, aren't you cracking up when Chip finds, I don't know what pool this is, and stabs?
It's a pool skimmer. You know, you clean.
Yeah, that's what I figured. And is able to stab Jennifer with it. And Jennifer, she just wants a tampon to plug up that hole in her. Isn't that hilarious?
I guess Diablo said that this was her Carrie joke because plug it up was such a laugh line in that movie, I guess. I don't know. I know. Again, every time I'm bringing up the commentary, you understand my anger. You understand why I look at this very silly, hard to be mad at movie and want to smack it dead. It's because of the pretension. It's not because of the movie. The movie is a silly whatever that can be maybe even enjoyed as a nostalgia piece. Remember 2009? This is, like a class reunion. But when you hear the ambitions of this Oscar-winning screenwriter and what they're trying to accomplish here, it's infuriating. It's just boiling my blood.
So we get the final confrontation between Jennifer and Needy at the end in Jennifer's bedroom. It was set up early on in the film. Remind me, was it in one of those books that Needy got from the cult section of her library that said you have to rip out the succubus's heart?
Yes.
Yeah, you have to attack when they're hungry because that's when they're at their weakest.
They also say they do have, there's a montage of just texts and words from the library books. And it does say stab the heart. And again, that's sort of the joke here is you stabbed me in the tit. No, I stabbed you in the heart.
Okay. But what causes Jennifer to lose her power isn't the stab, but when Needy rips off the BFF heart necklace that Jennifer was still wearing.
Yeah, because don't you see the deep metaphors about their lesbian relationship and that's what really gave her power? I don't know. None of this makes sense.
It's not even lesbian. It's the idea that you were supposed to be my friend, but really all these times you were putting me down and now I'm going to finally free myself of that. If it had even dealt with that.
But why does that take away Jennifer's power? She never cared about that friendship.
Again, the person that needed the demon the whole time was Anita. Like this, Jennifer didn't need to become more powerful. This was a miscalculation from jump.
Yeah, you're right. It would have been more interesting if the popular girl's now being shown up by her mousy, nerdy friend because she got some demonic power. You're absolutely right.
Right? I mean, how could that not make more sense? A girl that already had the power to have eyes on her is now just going to bite people. But again, to keep her looks, I don't know.
You've got me thinking about something I hadn't with this movie. You know how in 90210,
no,
Kelly kept Donna around and Kelly was really attractive, but looked even more attractive when standing next to Tori Spelling?
Okay, yes, I know who you're talking about now. Yep.
Yeah, I know those names.
It's kind of like, I mean, I think this is a trope, and I think there's something in real life about how the really pretty girl likes to have a not-so-pretty girl near her.
Yeah, that's there. That's been there in the whole movie. Yeah, that was why she wanted her to go to the club. That was, yes, this is a girl that likes to have a nerd that is, like, she can talk to and have as a wing woman. But, like, in the end, we'll never get the boys that I want.
Yeah, so if there was more of that in this movie, if that was more spelled out, then I could see why, to a degree,
you would call it a movie. Yes, it would be about relationships, and it would be about something dramatic would have happened by having this girl saying, we're not best friends anymore. That would end the spell that was between them.
It would also help reinforce why Jennifer is so obsessed with keeping her looks. It would be interesting if she was torn about killing boys. I don't want to kill boys, but I'd rather kill boys than be uglier than my friend.
I guess, I don't know. Pick a theme and go with it is all I can say. It needed to be about one thing. And by doing it this way, it's about nothing at all.
But the mother I didn't know Jennifer had walks in to see Needy there with the box cutter and Jennifer's chest. And so, as in the unrated cut, we knew this was coming. She's in prison or a mental institution or what have you.
In this institution, again, we get a scene with Needy and her mom earlier where her mom's like, I had a dream that you're crucified like Jesus. Is this the crucifixion here? I was waiting for her to literally be nailed to a cross at some point. But is this like a metaphorical crucifixion? Because she did something good. She saved humanity from the succubus, but she's being punished now in an institution.
You would think that an Oscar-winning screenwriter would be crowing about such a thing on their chance to do so in a commentary track. But there's no admission that was what was going on. And I'm not sure that the director in trying to give this movie something didn't work in. There's a lot of crucifixes in this shot. When she's thrown in solitary confinement, there's a big X on the floor. When they go into the bar, the tab, they cross off their hands to let them know that they've passed and are been accepted inside the club. Like, crucifix imagery is all over this, but it just feels like an attempt to, again, just grab at something. I don't know what it would mean. If it's powerful for you to think that she's female genius saving us all from more Megan Fox movies, okay, I'm not ready to bow down to that, but I'm grateful.
But yeah, we're going to find out Needy has demon powers, even though I thought she'd been in this institution for a while. She's known as a kicker. Like, people have gotten to know her, but now is the time, I guess, those powers manifest and she's able to just walk out of this institution, the solitary confinement.
Hitch a ride with Lance Hendrickson because he said yes.
She finds that knife. We find out where Devil's Kettle is exiting.
How does Lance Hendrickson not do something to make him be killed? I mean, when he picks her up, he seems a little bit lecherous. It's a much older man picking up a high school girl on the side of the road. I thought Lance Hendrickson was going to die. I mean, he's a genre icon. Why do you bring him in just to say a couple lines and not kill him?
Yeah, you would think that that would be how he would be used. But again, if this were about getting out of small town, this man is giving her the gift of finally getting out of... You're right. She's found where all the stuff comes out of. You throw that stuff into the waterfall. No one ever saw it again. Well, the knife got thrown in there. She's found it. She's found her way out. And all I got to say is this movie ends too early then. All right. She goes to the hotel and kills all the boys. She now going to go just eat any men? Is her power now just to kill new men?
I don't think she has to eat men. She just kills them.
Why do you think that?
She says she gets some of the power, but we never see her eat anybody. We never see her teeth out. She just murders.
Yeah, but she levitates just like Jennifer did, which, again, I thought those scenes, those levitation scenes, very brief, but they looked real cool.
Jennifer said that she was losing her looks, which just meant that she looked as average as any other girl. And so in order to still be pretty, she had to eat men. So, again, I really want to know, all right, Nita, now that you have this power and you've killed the men that we've all recognized were wrong, what are you doing with it?
Yeah, does she give in to that temptation that it's all about looks, which I think this film is... we've talked about the messaging. It's all mixed up, but like, I would think the film would not want that point.
Yeah. How dare you exploit me? Now look at my tits.
Yeah.
So Jacob, Stuart, you recommend Jennifer's Body. Jacob.
You know, I think one of the challenges, whenever you watch a movie and you're trying to make judgment, there's that pull between, you know, your emotional response and just then more objective, logical, like, analysis. And I think we try to do a balance of both of those here on Now Playing. Like, we definitely have emotional responses to films, but we got to talk about them for over an hour. So you got to really get into the logic. And I agree with something you said earlier, Arnie, that if you just want to watch a horror film that goes from A to B to C, and don't really look too close to that map of how you get from A to B to see, like, this is fine, I guess. Like, it doesn't really work as a comedy, but I see it attempting to do that. Not enough kills for it to be a fun horror film. I think if there would have been a slaughter at that formal, like, maybe that could have pushed me, or if there are just more kills, more gratuitous blood, like, something to dig my teeth into. Megan Fox got plenty of men, I guess, to dig her teeth into, but I don't in this film. Like, I needed more, but again, my curiosity was, after watching this, okay, I was told this is a cult classic, it's an underrated gem that people should appreciate. Why do people think that? And I feel like a lot of people, you watch movies and what attracts you are little vignettes. Maybe it's not the whole thing, but you grab onto one thing. Oh, here's a woman going after men after she was killed by men. That's a great feminist message. Or they're having this lesbian relationship. That's great that it's so gay friendly. Like, I can understand that line of thought. And if that's what this film is saying to you, if it's saying something about your high school experience, great. Like, I don't want to take that away from anyone. Like, 2009 is not the year I graduated high school. It was many, many years before that. So when I sit down and watch this and trying to parse it out, it is a mess of a film. So again, I think you could watch this as just, you know, turn your mind off. It's Halloween. I want to watch a scary movie and maybe it will work for you. But if you really want to understand this film, what is this getting at? Why do people gravitate towards this? I don't see a consistent through line in the film, and it sounds like Diablo Cody didn't see a consistent through line either. So, like, I get the emotional response, but I think this film is too much of a logical mess for me to get into, and I think I would just warn people against it. Like, yeah, if you get thrills out of watching women kill men because it's a great feminist thing, then maybe there's something here. But if you want a satisfying story that really gets down deep into something about human nature, there's no subtext here. There's no meat to really sink your teeth into here. So it's a not recommend.
Stuart.
Yeah, I think I've been pretty clear about the not recommend. I'm actually going to dial it back a little bit. I don't hate this movie. I really don't. I watched this movie and I just went, huh, what the hell was that? I don't understand any of this. It's really what I felt when I watched this movie. When I listened to that commentary and when I saw how little had been given to justify any of this, I got enraged. It makes me furious to know. It's just not fair. The world's not fair. You know, what can you say? People win awards that shouldn't. Kevin Smith is proclaimed a genius. Diablo Cody has an Oscar. Shouldn't have happened. But, you know, here's the proof you can hold up to say huge sophomore slump. Almost the career definition of a sophomore slump is to go from Juno to this. Juno was charming and cute and used all the slang in a way that, you know, it worked. On its own terms, it was a fine little film. And here, all of those impulses lead to disastrous effect. And not aided, I mean, Diablo's Cody's script is awful, but not helped by the fact that you have Megan Fox as comedian trying to make sense of this very confused horror comedy, which is neither scary nor funny. I do think that, yes, if you came of age in 2009, just going back, just as it is for me to go and watch a dumb horror movie from the 80s and smell that nostalgia, this could be very much an intoxicating thing to go back to and laugh about a place in time for yourself. But as far as a movie that has anything to say about anything, about a single idea, I couldn't follow it. I don't know what it means. It means nothing to me. It's gibberish that exposes that, yes, people get awarded things too soon. And Diablo Cody would probably have done better not to have gotten the Oscar so quick. I think she went on to write many good movies, so I'm not proclaiming her over, but this was a script that should have never been greenlit, but was because she had the power to do so. So great that you have your, you know, smart bombs and what have you, but you want to be sure when you start a war, you're not getting into something you can't get out of. And that's what happens with Jennifer's Body.
And coming into this, if I thought I'd be the one defending it the most, I would not have suspected that.
No, I didn't think you were going to like this movie. I thought we had discussed it back in the day.
Yeah, but I apparently didn't dislike it as much as you did, Stuart, but I only had to watch it once also.
Again, I want to say I don't dislike this movie that much. I really hate the commentary. I'm recognizing that I'm attacking something. I'm attacking the movie for the things that are happening outside of it. And maybe that's unfair, but I still don't like the movie.
Coming back, I think I would have rather been eaten by a succubus than rewatch this movie. It was literally like torture for me to sit down and push play. I was telling my wife all the things I would rather do, including re-injure my arm, than watch this movie.
That's pretty strong. I mean, it's a horror movie. It's 90 minutes. We've done more challenging things to get through.
It's nearly 2 hours. It's 1 hour 50. But once I started watching it, I realized it's not that bad. It's not good. It's not a recommend.
Good. Okay, yes.
But it's not that bad. As I remember, I don't want to hurt myself to avoid watching it.
Right. It isn't that bad. It's silly.
Megan Fox isn't that bad here. She's not up for the role. She's certainly not up for the part she's given. She doesn't have the range or the timing, as you've pointed out. But this may be the finest acting job I've ever seen her do.
I mean,
I don't know. Turtles, she may be better.
Maybe. She was not bad in the first Turtles.
Did she eat one of those hamburgers in one of those Burger King commercials?
No, that was Paris Hilton.
Oh, okay. I feel like that might be her finest work.
Some of those Maxim magazine covers, too. But, I mean, it's just not awful. And, of course, Amanda Seyfried was a good actress, would go on to do good things. And here, she's fine. But the movie does not cohere in any way. It is a bad movie. It's not even a close to a recommend. This is a bad movie. But just not as bad as I thought it was when I watched it before, where I thought it had no redeemable qualities. It does seem to me like just a bad horror movie that, yes, if I was 15 years younger the first time I saw it, I might really have been able to cling to, like I did The Craft.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think The Craft has better performances and more to say.
They're about the same in my mind. I would say this is about as good as a Craft movie.
I would go with The Craft before this one, just because that had a fun haunted house ending with things transforming. Like, if this would have had a slaughter at the formal, I might have recommended it.
Very true.
Or a better actress as Jennifer.
Yes.
So, there's a lot of hot women in Hollywood. You can find a few who can act. But no, what I thought was, what Jennifer needed in order to really feed on her victims was for them to be hopeless. And going into this movie, I was hopeless. And I came out of it, but it surpassed my very low expectations. Yeah. So kudos on not being what I would expect to have been the worst movie we've reviewed on Now Playing. You're still better than 98% of the video game movies. But it's a bad movie and not one I don't think anyone needs to see. And I don't understand what people would have other than nostalgia of in high school, why you would appreciate this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like if this is disappointing in a lot of ways, but don't undervalue the power of just seeing things that got forgotten. I mean, Megan Fox herself feels like a relic of 10 years ago. Where has she been in all of this time since? Yeah, Panic at the Disco is still around, but a lot of this music scene is gone. And again, if you ever had any love for what's being pushed here, you would be happy to return to it.
I did look it up, and in 2020, she had a movie called Rogue, in which she is a mercenary leading a squad of soldiers on a hostage rescue mission in Africa.
Funnier than this movie, I can guarantee you.
I thought you were going to bring up her 2020 film, Think Like a Dog, a TV film about a boy with a psychic link to his dog, and apparently she's top bill. I want to see this now.
Oh my god, is she the voice of the dog?
I was hoping for that. It does not look like that, no.
She's also got one of those Bruce Willis movies that he does every 2 weeks, like recently. So yeah, she has continued to work, and I imagine she's got stories to tell. I imagine she probably could play this part better now that she realizes how her image has been used than at the height of her fame. She just didn't have the knowing and the savvy to parody herself the way that she's become a joke now.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't long after this she would marry Brian Austin Green, which very well may be why I had 90210 on my mind.
Oh my god, she married him?
3 kids together, too.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Good for him, right?
You know what? I never want, like, people, like, to be ruined by a movie. I'm glad she's gone and had a life.
She's now with Machine Gun Kelly, though.
Oh.
Okay, that's why she's got all those music video credits with them. That makes sense.
Okay. That also, that's who I would put her with. I'll be honest. If I were playing Matchmaker, I probably would have never hooked her up with the nerd from 90210. But
she just must have a thing for rappers, right? Brian Austin Green, Machine Gun Kelly.
Was he a rapper?
He did have a Nonstop Carnival album that is a real hoot. I recommend that.
Funnier than this movie.
But you know what? I just want to reassert, even though it sounds like we're all pretty much on the same page, it wasn't extremely painful to go through this. I understand why somebody would like it, but definitely not where we're headed to next. We are leaving behind the horror camp of Jennifer's Body. Patrons, next month, because Dune is coming out, we wanted to do another film from the same director. We are going to cover Arrival, the Oscar-winning sci-fi movie of just a few years ago with Amy Adams and Hawkeye.
Wait, no, I watched the Charlie Sheen movie from the 90s. Did I watch the wrong one?
You would. You probably just watch that regularly, Charlie Sheen.
That is the Arrival, and you're right. Anything Charlie Sheen, I don't think anyone would have to donate for you to want to cover. But yes, this is another patron pick.
Yeah, big sci-fi film that got a lot of buzz when it came out. I remember getting caught up in that hype.
Best Picture nominee? Yeah, I feel like it's going to be better than Jennifer's Body, or at least more my cup of tea. We'll find out.
So thank you for being a patron. Thank you for supporting Now Playing. We greatly appreciate it. And John, thank you for pledging and picking this movie. We didn't enjoy this movie, but hopefully you enjoyed the review. That's all I can hope for out of this. Thank you for being a patron, all of you who pledge to Now Playing. So until next time, God bless you, kids.
I
I don't know who Needy Lesnicki is anymore. I'm a different person now. A person who uses curse words and kicks orderlies and sees things that aren't there. A very bad, very damaged person.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign. And we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
MoveOn.org, Needy, it's over.
Without patrons such as yourself, we couldn't keep doing the shows we put out every single Tuesday. So thanks to you all.
Thank you. We are professionals.
And a special thanks to John O'Connor for his incredible support of our show and for picking Jennifer's Body for us to review.
Seems nice.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
I'm kind of the shit.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
I'm not too hopeless.
Now Playing is edited by Heath and Arnie.
They're basically like agents of Satan with really awesome haircuts.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
You don't have to talk if you don't want to.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I recommend you shut the fuck up.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
I'm gonna call the police.
Okay, why don't you narc me out? I have the cops in my back pocket, Needy.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
I'm not saying that to be a dill hole.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2021, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Sandbox love never dies.
I mean, her photos, scantily clad, were on the front of magazines to sell magazines. I bought some of those magazines, GQ and what have you. Not GQ, Maxim and what have you.
GQ, Maxim, yeah. Give me a break, GQ.
Megan Fox is high school hottie Jennifer, and Amanda Seyfried is her nerdy best friend, Anity, who Jennifer nicknamed Needy.
Anita, you mean?
Anita.
Oh, Anita.
Anity.
Fucking autocorrect. I have one arm. I'm typing Amityville? Everything on my fucking phone, okay?
No, I get it.
Okay, this will be amusing then. Anity. Okay.
Like manatee.
Never heard of that name in my life.
I'm looking at it. It's like if it had three more letters, it would be Antifa.
Yeah.
She was ahead of her time, see? Diablo knew.
I watched Ricky and the Flash and didn't care for that, so.
You in a Meryl Streep movie? How could that not go off?
Marjorie loves Rick Springfield. So if there's a Rick Springfield movie, chances are I've seen it.
But you want to be sure when you start a war, you're not getting into something you can't get out of. And that's what happens with Jennifer's body.
It's funny you say that as we're evacuating diplomats in Afghanistan right now.
Yeah, it's probably on my mind. It's probably not even a coincidence.
Like, literally, I'm looking at pictures of helicopters, like,
yeah,
flying people out.
Yeah, that's...
We didn't enjoy this movie, but hopefully you enjoyed the review. That's all I can hope for out of this.
Which of the many lines do you have as a closer?
I'm looking. There's
You could just sing through the trees.
No, I can't.
to the trees. God, I heard that so many times.
Oh, it's, yeah. I ended up liking the song. Now I can sing it since you did that. Through the trees, I will follow. Here, I'll say this. Thank you for being a patron. All of you who pledged to Now Playing, you just give me such a weddy. God, such awful dialogue in this film.
Nice insult, Hannah Montana.
Mm-hmm. It's shutties, okay? I had to look what that up. It means shut up. Shutties. I'm ready to shutties the book on this one. Oof.